You know, on the phone right now, we're lucky we've got Mike Schultz. Even though he's on the road, he agreed to do an interview with us tonight. And Mike, of course, is a filmmaker from Duluth. He his latest documentary, Wild Bill's Run, is just a really audacious story, but very true story about Wild Bill Cooper's Arctic adventure. It also includes what happened after the Arctic adventure, which is crazier than the snowmobile ride. He and some of his buddies and relatives took off from Willow River, or actually Forest Lake, and decided they were going to end up in Moscow. That was in 1972. It's just an amazing story. Mike got a hold of the footage, 16 millimeter footage. We'll have to ask him what that was like to convert from a lot of that trip, and has come up with a documentary where he also includes a lot of the original participants in that almost 6,000 mile ride back in 1972. Mike works in healthcare marketing by day. He's a filmmaker at night, and I'm not sure how he found time to do such a beautiful job with this thing. Mike, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
You know, I got a hold of that film from you yesterday. I missed when it was here in North House in November, and I watched it three times last night.
Oh, wow, that's a great compliment. Thank you.
And actually, I knew a couple of the participants from my retail business. They've been in there for different reasons over the years. Oh. So that also made it a little more interesting.
But yeah, it's probably a good thing you didn't come to see it at the Arctic Film Festival. It was standing room only. It was packed. It maybe wasn't the most comfortable way to see it. So
yeah, they had like 100 people down at North House. They're going to show it again either in March now or in early April. And we're going to keep the folks here hip on just when that happens. You know, I as I mentioned, I watched it last night. Actually, I watched it three times, and I was just amazed at what a great job you did in working in the original people who did this trip. They're still all alive, except who knows about Bill Cooper, working them into this documentary. What was it like to meet these guys, and what was your impression of them now?
Yeah, I worked on it for about 4 years, so I didn't quite meet them all at once. I got in contact with the deputy leader of the expedition, Dick Luckin, first, and he had most of the 16 millimeter footage that you see throughout the film. And I met him and said, "Hey, would you mind if I, made a film about your story?" And I kind of got the sense he'd been waiting around for 30 some years for someone to finally realize this would make a great story. And he was really happy that I was interested. But even so, when you meet someone for the first time, it's hard to trust them enough to let them, document a part of your life. So it took me a few months to meet some of the other guys and kind of convince them in the same way that I wasn't a complete yahoo, and I could be, trusted to tell their story, which is, as you were saying, it's a pretty crazy story at times. And I think there's enough, salacious material in it that someone could really do a very sensationalistic piece. And I wanted, I always saw it as more of an inspiring story than something for the National Enquirer.
One of the themes that I kind of picked up on running through this story was that here's five relatively ordinary people. I mean, it sounds to me like they met at the Squirrel Cage Bar regularly, and this is where the idea was hatched, with Wild Bill Cooper being a bartender down there. And as I look through the list of people that did take part in this, I mean, here's Frank Larson, a good friend of Bill Cooper's, and his stepson, Rob Goodman, and his brother-in-law, who you've met first, along with Bill Juntinen, who was a very good cinematographer. Somehow they got him to take part. But where I was going with that is these people weren't somebody that Bill Cooper searched out because of their expertise.
No, they weren't. It was almost whoever was handy. And I asked them, you know, were you worried about, you know, getting along with each other? And they said, oh, no, there weren't like personality tests or anything like that to determine if this no. was the if this was the right team to go to the Arctic. It really was just whoever was, you know, handy and maybe whoever was at the bar that night. In a certain sense, but they said they, you know, they got along great, even when they started smelling, you know, pretty badly, and I think it was just the sheer force of Bill Cooper's personality that kind of, you know, carried them through a lot of this stuff and made them believe that they could actually travel across the Arctic to Moscow.
Yeah, it's just an audacious idea. This is 6,000 miles of, you can't get more rugged as far as what the terrain was going to be, and more cold and more inhospitable and probably not even more carelessly planned.
No, that was the thing. They had no idea what the terrain was going to be like. They just figured, well, we'll figure it out when we get there.
But yet they follow, if five ordinary guys are following one pretty extraordinary person in Bill Cooper.
Sure. Well, and he, you know, he grew up in northern Canada. And so I think he felt like he was familiar enough with the conditions up there and you know, would be able to figure out anything as he got there. But it was, you know, the Arctic is strange once you get up there. There's The snow doesn't behave the same way it does down here, and the ice doesn't always behave the same way, freezing over the sea water. So I just think they certainly bit off a lot more than they could chew. But they still made it a lot further than any other group of, you know, six guys starting from a bar going up into the Arctic have probably ever made it.
Can you fill our audience in? I did it in a very shallow way, but just a little bit of what this trip was to be and why.
Sure. Yeah, his dream was to ride this team of snowmobiles over the Arctic, you know, near the North Pole. They didn't necessarily think they would stop at the North Pole, and then eventually arrive in Moscow as sort of a peaceful mission at the height of the Cold War. They thought this could really make a difference in international relations. And, you know, if they made it to Moscow, which they, you know, assumed they would, then they thought they could just continue right across Russia on this goodwill tour and eventually get to the Bering Strait and go across to Alaska and then come back through Canada. And so in the sense that you can go around the world on a snowmobile, that was their goal, to literally circle the northern part of the globe on snowmobile. And they didn't make it that far. They the first winter they made it to northern Canada, and they had to leave the snowmobiles behind and come home, and then they thought, well, let's just go back up there the next winter and try and go a little further. And that year they only made it to Greenland. And they actually had hoped to go back a third year and you know, go on to Scandinavia and Russia. But I think that the expense of this expedition was just too much for all of these guys. And especially for Bill Cooper. I'm not 100% sure where he got, you know, the money to do this expedition. But he certainly had a lot of debts. And so about two-thirds of the way through the film, there's kind of an interesting turn in the film where we reveal that he started running a massive quantity of marijuana from Mexico to Minnesota after the expedition to help pay for some of those debts. And for a time, he was actually the biggest drug smuggler in Minnesota.
Isn't that an amazing turn in the whole story? It's like, where did that come from? You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I obviously that's a fascinating part of his character, because, you know, this first part seems like this goodwill mission, and he's concerned about world peace, and then he comes back and he becomes this, you know, this criminal mastermind. But I think it all kind of comes from the same place. He was just like a man with really big ideas, and, you know, those don't always manifest in the same ways, I guess.
Well, you know, I mentioned earlier in my description was that it might be a little carelessly planned. I was amazed that the second year would get to Kanak in Greenland, and oh, I guess we didn't bring our passports, and oh, I guess we didn't ask any permission to be here, and suddenly they're all arrested.
Yeah, they had asked Senator Hubert Humphrey at the time, you know, for visas for Russia, but I don't know if they just didn't look at a map that closely and realize that there were a lot of countries in between Canada and Russia. And so they had no passports with them, no permission to be in Greenland, and that's where they got arrested for a brief time.
And then they decide to head north and leave Bill Cooper there to solve the problem, and he writes them a bad check and goes and joins those guys.
Yep, that was kind of his solution, you know, for everything, just to sort of talk your way out of it and worry about the consequences later.
You know, as I was watching the film, and as I mentioned earlier, you have, you know, the five people who were instrumental with Bill Cooper in doing this at their present day ages. And I was so impressed, and I thought it was such an integral part of the documentary with Rob Goodman.
Oh, yeah. Rob was great because he's a theatrical director in Milwaukee, and so he's, you know, naturally a really good storyteller. And I love the other guys in the film, but I think they've lived in Minnesota most of their lives, and I think they're a little stoic, you know, for
very
having
stoic
lived here that long. And so I would ask them a question about you know, these crazy dangerous things that happened to them, and they just sort of shrug their shoulders at me and say, well, yeah, that's the way it was. It was pretty crazy. But you can't really maybe get them to talk as much about their thoughts and feelings about it as I could. Rob Goodman, he was very good at explaining, you know, what they thought of some of the dangers that they saw.
We're speaking with Mike Schultz, and Mike is a Duluth filmmaker. His latest documentary, Wild Bill's Run, is a strange but true story about Wild Bill Cooper and an Arctic run, and also a marijuana run. So this documentary, Mike, has been just doing wonderful at all the film festivals. Can you tell people just where it's been played and some of the kudos that you've received along the way?
Sure. Yeah, it's won, you know, a few best documentary features at some of the festivals it's played at. Most recently it played just last week at the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival in Missoula, Montana, which has become one of the nation's biggest, documentary-centered film festivals. Another big festival for documentary fans is Hot Springs, which was 10 straight days of, you know, 14 hours a day documentaries. So if you like documentary films, it's like summer camp for documentary film lovers. And the most fun festival was the Banff Mountain Film Festival, which is in Banff in Alberta, Canada. And they liked the film so much they invited it to go on their world tour. So it's actually been playing, you know, all over the country, all over the world over the next year. I think tonight it's in Philadelphia. It's almost gotten hard to keep track, and it's, you know, hard to believe in a lot of ways.
Well, it was very impressive when I saw it. You did such a great job putting this thing together. Can you convey to our audience just what kind of weather temperatures and conditions these guys faced when they got into the Arctic?
Sure, yeah. It's when they were going into Churchill, Manitoba, which, you know, isn't that far north of us, really, they were dealing with real temperatures of 70 below, and they estimated maybe even 75 below. And they couldn't even dream what that would be with wind chill, because there was a lot of wind. And that was actually the worst part of the trip, temperature-wise, was just south of Churchill. In I guess that would have been right around this time of year. And you know, after that, the temperatures, you know, improved drastically to 30 and 40 below. And they all said, once it gets up to 30 and 40 below, it's just thrilling. It just feels, you know, so wonderful. And I can't even imagine that. A lot of people ask me if I wish I could have gone on the actual expedition or, you know, retraced their route. And I always say, no, there's absolutely no way I would ever do that. It looks miserable.
And I was very familiar with the snow machines about that time, and they had to be fixing those machines constantly in that kind of temperature to keep going.
Yep, they were, and that's why they would some days only go like literally 1 or 2 miles on some of the days where the terrain wasn't cooperating, and you know, when you slow down like that, then the machines start breaking down one by one, and I know it would often take them several hours just to get them going in the morning, just because of the cold, yeah.
And then when they decided to go to Baker Lake, north of there, they found that they were lost most of the time, and that leads me to another thought about that, is that here they are, these guys all admit we had no idea where we were, and Bill Cooper would stand on his machine and just look out over the Arctic and say, this is the way we're going.
Yeah.
That takes extraordinary trust in that position to just say, okay, I guess we're following him.
Yeah, they, they pointed out to me, well, it takes trust, but also, like, what choice did we have? It's not like any of the rest of them felt up to attempting to lead the expedition. And, you know, as lost as they felt, and I guess as lost as they often were, they all survived the expedition. They all eventually made it to the next town, you know, on their itinerary. So even though there were a lot of fits and starts, he was ultimately a successful expedition leader.
You have to trust somebody in those situations, don't you?
Yeah. And he had a very straightforward way of telling them things. When one of the guys was complaining one day and said, "Oh, I wish I wasn't here," Bill Cooper's words of wisdom were, "Well, everybody's got to be somewhere," and I don't really know what that means, but it's kind of brilliant in a way.
That was Bill Jenton, I think, who turned out to be a very talented cinematographer in his career.
Yeah, he's had a long career. He actually went back to Greenland in the early 80s and did a film with Concordia College in Moorhead. Their cross-country ski program skied across Greenland.
Wow.
So he's gone up there for a couple of films.
That's remarkable. I had... we mentioned about what happened after this expedition and kind of disappeared because of Bill Cooper's troubles with the law and just disappeared. Through your research follow-up with all of these folks and the events of the day, what are your thoughts about what happened to Bill Cooper?
Well, what I want to believe or what I wish was true and what I think must have happened. A lot of people, you know, the more romantic people want to believe that he, he was very familiar with Northern Canada and he lived in the wilderness most of his life, that it would be, you know, once the legal trouble started, that it would be the easiest thing in the world for him to just, you know, go up to Canada and disappear. But I don't believe that, and a lot of his family members ultimately don't believe that happened, just because he was very close to his family, and they have a hard time believing that he would, you know, really be able, he's probably not the kind of guy who could really disappear without a trace. He was a people person, and it would just be really hard to break contact with everyone. So the prevailing theory is that, you know, that some of the drug dealers that he was working with probably weren't happy about some of his ongoing legal troubles and may have, done something to him in a Mexican desert. And he he's buried there today. We just don't know where exactly.
Well, I'm kind of like you. I'd love it if he was still out and about somewhere to have, such a romantic figure, a folk hero, in essence, in many parts of Minnesota, if not other places. just die, you know, down in Mexico like that just doesn't make the story right.
No, it doesn't feel like the right ending for it. And, you know, I don't believe in Bigfoot or the Loch Ness Monster, but I want to.
Yeah,
I want to believe in these things, so I'm just going to choose to believe that, I guess.
Good for you, Mike. We've been speaking with Mike Schultz, and Mike, of course, is as I mentioned, is a Duluth filmmaker. He's just released, I believe, last spring. The movie documentary Wild Bill's Run, which is a strange but true story of Wild Bill Cooper. It's part Arctic adventure and part kind of crime caper. So Wild Bill Run is going to be playing again down here locally at North House Folk School sometime in March or April. Stay tuned for that time. Where else can people see it? That would be somewhere in our vicinity, Mike.
It's not too close. It is playing next week at the Fargo Film Festival, if anyone wants to drive across to the opposite side of Minnesota. It's playing next Thursday at 7, and after that, it's hard to remember where it's playing, but we do hope to have it out on DVD in a few months. Once it's finished playing at festivals and on the Banff World Tour, we want to be able to offer it at the website, which is wildbillsrun.com.
Okay, and folks can learn more about it at that site and also see a trailer, I believe.
Yep, that's up right there, yeah.
Just kind of Google Wild Bill's Run.
Yeah.
And it'll pop up. Great. Well, I want to thank you so much, Mike, for joining us. I know you're busy out in Ohio or somewhere out east, and it's real nice of you to take the time out to speak to all our folks tonight. So good luck with your documentary.
Yeah, well, thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you.